This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is Young, onto his right foot.
Stunner!
We've witnessed something quite extraordinary at Old Trafford this afternoon. Manchester United 8, Arsenal 2.
Good evening. This is the Manchester United fan show on Love Sport. I'm Matt Beadle. We're with you through until 10 p.m. this evening. And of course, that was the commentary from Ashley Young's second goal of the game in that emphatic 8-2 victory over Arsenal in 2011. What an afternoon that was. Wouldn't it be lovely? Wouldn't it just be lovely to have a repeat of such a scoreline tomorrow evening? Arsenal, of course, having not won at Old Trafford since 2006 in the Premier League. They have won, of course, in the FA Cup since then. But in the Premier League, the club have not won since 2006 that season, of course, signalling a first Premier League triumph, title triumph for Manchester United since 2003. Of course, they then went back to back with three Premier League title triumphs, in a row. It is a big, big game for Manchester United this week. Of course, success on the pitch hasn't been great in recent weeks. And I'm delighted to say that joined as ever on the line, we have our Northwest correspondent, Mark Flanagan, with us. Hello, Mark.
Evening, Matt.
How are we?
I'm very well, thank you. Yes, enjoyable weekend so far.
Good stuff. Well, listen, today we've kind of tried to focus on some positives. We've had the Watford fan show, we've had the AFC Wimbledon fan show. Now it's the United fan show. And in a week where the club announced record revenues, I mean, we're looking at what, £627.1 million for the year ending June 30th. It can't all be bad, can it?
No, that is good news.
I'm trying my best, Matt,
not to come back with a negative this early. I'm really trying. Apologies.
It's tough, isn't it? I mean, those figures have come out, but on one hand, it's great that those figures are coming out. But what it's also kind of saying is that is where Ed Woodward is very good at his job. But where he's not so good at his job is what's happening on the pitch right now.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is the eye-catching figure that really stands out for me was the escalation in the wage bill to £332 million. And when you look at Manchester United's squad and you consider Ollie's options at the moment, three or four injuries, and he's having to play people like Chong and Gomez, who have very little Premier League experience and haven't looked great coming on. Obviously, it's early days for them, but you do wonder, when you consider the amount of money that the players are receiving, and someone like Marcus Rashford is receiving £5 million a year more than Harry Kane, you do wonder the strategy of the amount of money that they're being asked to pay for these players. And obviously in the week that Paul Pogba's agent demanded £600,000 a week, it just does feel slightly crazy. And obviously the De Gea package is enormous when no one else was contending for his signature. So Manchester United players are doing very well financially. It's just a shame they can't repeat that kind of level on the pitch as well.
I've got to touch on what's been said on Sky Sports this week. Often, I don't know whether it's fair to say that they're quite quick to dig Manchester United out or not, but there's been a few bits and pieces on Sky, and the Sunday supplement crew, Steve Bates, the chief football writer at the Sunday People, has claimed, or believes in fact, that the aura and the mystique has gone from Old Trafford. That was the key quote from what he had to say. Martin Samuel, obviously a very, very good journo, well-respected journo, has said there are a whole generation of players out there for whom Manchester United are nothing special. What do you make of that, and do you agree with it?
Yeah, very much. I think he's, you know, the aura of United is gone for me in so many different respects, and actually the stadium as well. The state of the stadium is very kind of interesting in terms of this. In the last 20 years, there's barely been any investment in Old Trafford, and obviously 20 years ago it was so much better than anything else around, and the rest of the clubs have caught up off the pitch in terms of the stadium and obviously on the pitch as well. And I think it's a really sort of significant and important statement that investment was not coming when United were at the top of their game, interestingly, when they won their Champions League with that great side that had Tevez and Ronaldo and Rooney. The spending was reined in for the next 3 years in a considerable way. And that was, I think, for me, the sort of beginning of the end of the you know, the era of domination, and the way that the Glazers obviously have sort of siphoned off funds and restricted it. Obviously, there's money was then spent in sort of 2012, 13, 14, but it was just that window of 3 years where the you know, their preeminence and their domination was the beginning of the end, really. And it's so hard to check that kind of momentum. You know, when you start to lose, it can become a vicious circle, and it just feels like that at the moment, that everything that can go wrong is kind of going wrong, and on and off the pitch. Even though obviously great news about the income, but next year they're projecting it's going to drop by sort of 50 or 60 million, so it's going to be difficult, and it's difficult for Ollie at the moment.
It is difficult, and it's hard because every time we do this Man United fan show, it always seems like there's an air of negativity. We're kind of being quite pessimistic about what's going on, and you'd like to think, as things stand with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, a club legend, being in charge of the club, that it wouldn't be the case. And this downbeat aura seems to be surrounding the club at the moment. When you look at stats and other bits and pieces like that, I mean, XG is a big thing now in football. XG is a massive thing. Everyone's always talking about it. The fact that United are just 4.28 against for the season, it's actually the lowest in the Premier League. So on one hand, that's not the worst thing. Of course, results are what matters, not what might happen via XG. No one can really judge. I mean, I know that statisticians and club staff look heavily into that when they're signing players or perhaps getting rid of players. But only Leicester and Liverpool going into this weekend had conceded less. Let's not forget that Leicester, everyone is now saying, you know, oh, I tell you what, they could actually infiltrate that top four. Not just the top six, but the top four. Man United beat Leicester this season. Is that not something to be chirpy about?
It's a huge positive, and obviously they beat Chelsea as well. And when you're trying to get into the top four, the top six, it's really important to beat the teams around you. It is so difficult to sort of stay positive when you consider, I think it's that thing of where United have been, isn't it? Any other club, you know, the scrutiny and everything else, it's enormous, and they've earned the right, the fans, I think, to have that kind of scrutiny. And as journalists, we are there to call it as we see it. And I think, you know, the remaining positive thing is an interesting one. I've always thought it's important to kind of call it as you see it, and as be as honest in your assessment as you can, whether that's positive, negative. It kind of doesn't really come into it for me, but I appreciate what you're saying, and I think the defence is the one really positive thing. You know, the fact that they are able to, you know, get clean sheets, which is obviously critically important when you want to win football matches, particularly when it's not particularly working and the attack isn't particularly fluid and scoring a lot of goals, which obviously is the case for United and has been for, well, ever since Paris Saint-Germain, really. You know, they've struggled to beat teams 2-3 and 4-0.
It's that game, isn't it? It's that PSG game that keeps coming back to haunt United fans in every stat that comes out. Since that wonderful night in Paris, this happens. And I think that I was asked the question earlier on the Fans Forum show with Dave Chidgey and Dave Seeger, and they said, you know, what's happened? What's happened at United? Does it date all the way back to when Fergie left in 2013? And realistically, I think you have to say it does. Because when you take it all the way back and you think about when Sir Alex took charge of the club in 1986, 10 years before Arsene Wenger took charge of Arsenal, when he kind of changed the landscape slightly in the Premier League. But what Arsene Wenger brought to Arsenal was an entire infrastructure. And that was the key thing, that when he left, Arsenal weren't just replacing a manager, they were replacing someone who basically had built an entire infrastructure at a club. So it was going to take time. It's not been too bad under Unai Emery, to be fair. Slightly more emphatic than it was in the 2 years after Sir Alex Ferguson left. But Sir Alex started building something the moment he rocked up at United in November 1986. And that was a massive, massive project, from building through the youth, from deciding that he wasn't going to do everything at the club and delegating to those who could do things like choosing the tea in the club canteen, for example. He was so heavily ensconced in the club that he eventually relieved himself of those duties, but worked so heavily on getting Manchester United back to the top. And yes, he did succeed in doing that. But when Sir Alex Ferguson left in 2013, alongside David Gill as a double whammy, I don't think you can instantly go and suddenly gain success again. I think it's very, very difficult for any business to do that. And, you know, the spectre of Sir Alex, I suppose, is kind of still looming over Manchester United, especially the fact that he's there. It's not just a spectre, he's actually in the ground with every game. So it's been quite difficult for his successors, you know, Louis van Gaal, David Moyes, Jose Mourinho. Now Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, you'd like to think, would have a better relationship with Sir Alex. But is it just, you mentioned cycles there, is it just that Manchester United, as things stand, are going through a cycle and we all just have to sit back and kind of see it through?
No, I'm not sure it is just a cycle. I think that's the worrying thing. I think it's interesting you mentioned Arsenal. You know, when they knew that Wenger was going to leave, they started to change the structure, because obviously Wenger was someone who didn't want a director of football. He wanted to control everything as much as he could, even more so than Sir Alex Ferguson, actually. And they brought in a director of football and they brought in people into the background while Wenger was still there. You know, we're talking about it, and lots of people are talking about the kind of what you do when you try and replace someone like Sir Alex Ferguson, which is virtually impossible. But it just seems that the kind of the joined up thinking just wasn't there, and going on Sir Alex's recommendation, and, you know, they should have used that as an opportunity and to change it, because they knew that they weren't going to get Sir Alex Ferguson. That there's only going to be ever one Sir Alex Ferguson. So if you're not going to get a manager who's going to be able to continue it in the way that he could, you need to build a team. And that's what the way modern football was going. And it was going that way even in, you know, even sort of 6 years ago. So I think that's a source of huge frustration for Manchester United fans, is the kind of it's almost like not adult thinking at the very top. You know, these guys are clever guys, successful in business. Why can't they see what we can see? And put in place the changes that are required. I mean, I know it's difficult to find the right people, but you're Manchester United and you had that window of opportunity whereby you were still considered the biggest club in the world and arguably the most successful. Now, it just with each year that goes past, it becomes harder to bring in the right people, to bring in the best people as director of football or manager. And then that filters down into the playing squad as well. And you know, I worry this could be a 6, 7, 8, 10 year problem for Manchester United, that they are falling so far behind on so many levels. With, you know, even the youth development, it's only recently they've started to take it seriously compared to, you know, what Manchester City do, for example, or Chelsea do. So there's so much catching up to do. Liverpool, City, Chelsea, Arsenal and Spurs aren't going to stop moving forward. It's not just a question of moving forward. It's catching them up, and that's a big problem for Manchester United.
Yeah, indeed it is, Mark. And why can't they see what all of us see? That is, of course, the million-dollar question, or perhaps the £627.1 million question, I should probably say. That's Mark Flanagan, our North West correspondent. Plenty more coming up on the Man United Fan Show on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Well, maybe that's carrying sympathy too far from the referee. And look what's happened as a result of it. Look at this. This is disgraceful. It's a free-for-all. And how will the referee be able to sort it all out? Alex Ferguson has had to come from the bench to try and intervene to restore some order.
Ah, the good old days of Granada television. That was October 1990. Little theme running through this evening's show. Of course, it is Manchester United against Arsenal at Old Trafford tomorrow. And we are looking back occasionally at some of the great games over the years. October 1990, the 21-man brawl instigated, quite surprisingly, by Anders Limpar and Nigel Winterburn and Dennis Irwin and Brian McClare, who I believe was kicking lumps, as they said, out of Nigel Winterburn as he laid across the floor. Some people suggest that that was the catalyst for what was then quite a fierce rivalry between the two sides. It's now subsided somewhat. I'm with Mark Flanagan now, our North West correspondent. Mark, that particular incident, it was a 50,000 fine given to both teams at the time. Arsenal docked 2 points, United docked one. Arsenal actually went on to win the league and only lost one game all season. But what an event that was.
Yeah, it was incredible. And I always remember the fact that the points were deducted. I can't recall a time before that or since that's happened, actually, for a brawl. So, yeah, it was massive. And, you know, they were obviously a great team under George Graham, and United were just starting to come on the way back. And obviously, yeah, it literally was the start of the, you know, what became the premier rivalry in English football for the next 10 years.
Yeah, incredible situation. Now, I remember Lee Dixon coming out and saying, I can't believe that they actually fined us. And I think Arsenal actually fined some of their own staff as well. George Graham got fined, which was all a bit of a crazy scenario. The only player, by the way, not involved in that, good old safe hands, David Seaman, staying exactly where he
well,
knew.
Well, he's a gentleman, isn't
well,
he,
that's
David?
It. And
so, yeah, a nicer bloke you'd struggle to meet, really.
Absolutely. Speaking of nice blokes, we've got Dale O'Donnell on the line as well now from Stretti News joining us. Thanks for joining us, Dale. I just want to move on to a discussion about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, because we spoke about Sky Sports earlier. There was a good, whether you can call it a good Q&A with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer earlier this week, and it was quite in depth. Him talking about his project at the club. And, you know, he has said, I'm just going to read out a few quotes. He said, it's not like the situation we had last year. There's no lack of desire here. It's all about building a new culture. And Mark, this is what we discussed earlier, building a new team, bringing everybody together. Is it the job I expected? Yes. I never said this was going to be a quick fix job. It's step after step after step. Dale, what do you make of that? Dale? No. Mark, I'll come to you instead. interesting quotes from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, aren't they?
Yeah, it's almost kind of saying, I didn't realise how big the job was, isn't it? It's, I guess, when you get to see the players close up and understand just how good they are and what their deficiencies are and what needs to work, what you need to work on, there is a little bit of covering himself, I guess, as well, which is only natural. And I think that sort of sense of frustration that he is kind of carrying the can and, you know, because of his roots and everything else, he will be so deeply frustrated that it's got to this point that the squad is so imbalanced and is lacking in depth, and the frustrations that the players that he would have wanted to bring in the summer weren't brought in. I suspect as well he would have quite happily sold Pogba and brought in two players in midfield to make Man United a better team. You know, Pogba nominally is world class, but you haven't got the attitude and the desire. Doesn't matter how much ability you've got. So I think he saw it as an important move to move Pogba on and bring in a couple of players, but that just they couldn't get that deal over the line, and that's a kind of example of the frustration that he will be feeling, and I think he's fearful of all the kind of 6 or 7 years of mismanagement from the top sort of really coming home to roost. And, you know, ultimately a lot of people are going to blame him, and actually you've got to ask the question, how much of it really is his fault? And tactically you can identify a couple of minor things, but if you haven't got the players, it doesn't really matter what tactics you have.
Yeah, absolutely. I am going to bring in Dale O'Donnell now from Stretti News. Dale, how are you doing?
Not too bad, sorry about that.
No, not a problem at all. Mark, feel free to jump in whenever you like. Dale, we're discussing the Q&A given by Ole Gunnar Solskjaer this week on Sky. I'm just going to quickly read out a quote and you can then jump in. You know, he said, at the end of it, we have a saying in Norway, you trust yourself, back yourself, you do it your way. As a player, was I good enough? Someone else has to say that. As a manager, will I be good enough? I trust myself to keep doing it the way I'm doing it. Dale, are you happy with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his approach to management thus far? And what's your take on United's season so far?
I think his approach to the situation has been fantastic, to be honest with you. If you put Mourinho in the situation, which it was a year ago, his demeanour was dour. And that definitely affected the dressing room. Now, I don't think the dressing room was anywhere near as bad as it was then. I think Solskjaer is doing his best to keep it upbeat. And not dwell too much on, obviously, it hasn't been a good start to the season. Results aren't good enough. It's shown no signs of consistency. Against Rochdale, they couldn't pass 5 yards. But look, I think maybe we might have to put up with a year of this inconsistency. And Solskjaer is trying to build his own team, build his own philosophy around that. He's still a young manager, inexperienced. And we've taken the plunge by giving him the job. And I just think we have to back him. The club is being run by clowns, parasites, and that's not his fault. And the way the club's in disarray, again, I wouldn't put it down to Solskjaer. There's people working that club, complete amateurs.
Do you agree with that, Mark?
Yeah, I was going to ask Dale, actually. Dale, obviously, you talked about clowns and parasites, and we all know the deficiencies at the top of Manchester United. If United don't beat Arsenal, Alkmaar and Newcastle, then you have the international break. Do you think there is a risk that they will press the panic button and sack Solskjaer and Phelan and the lot and possibly look to bring in a replacement, even this early?
No, I don't think so. And I think as well as they don't want the manager of high maintenance to have that with Mourinho. And they know with Solskjaer, they can keep... Is he a yes man? Is he going to belt everything they say? Probably. And they like that. You know, he's going to come a lot cheaper than a lot of other managers out there. Pochettino are talking over 30 million. The Glazers won't spend that. You know, they just won't.
No, I was thinking more of Allegri, who's available, really.
Again, I think he'd be too high maintenance because he'd be demanding, wouldn't he? He's been at a top club. He's been successful, so he's going to demand. He won't want to come to United and that tarnish his reputation or his CV by not winning anything and going through what Mourinho went through. So I don't think he'd be interested in that job anyway.
It's interesting, isn't it, chaps, that we're actually having this discussion because, you know, if history tells us anything since 2013, that perhaps pressing that panic button, as you describe it, Mark, hasn't quite worked out. With Jose, I think it was the right decision. Louis van Gaal, the football we know was quite turgid at times, but was he trying to build something? He invested a lot in youth. David Moyes... You know, the chosen one, as it were. Is there an argument, and I imagine I will get shot down instantly on this, that maybe Manchester United could have persevered with the first of those two in Moyes and Van Gaal? Dale?
Oh, Moyes, no. Van Gaal, look, it was the wrong time for him to come to United. The players were bored. They were bored of him. They weren't listening to him. They weren't interested. Look, when you come in, you say you're going to win a league in 3 years, or your plan will come together in 3 years, or whatever Van Gaal said, that's fine, but you have to have results on the way for players to buy into what you're coaching, and he didn't have that. Football, people are bored of Old Trafford too. So no, I'm not sure about that. Look, I wanted Mourinho. Mourinho didn't work out, but the club didn't help him either. Like, Mourinho would need a proper club, working properly, spending right, buying the right players he wants, and not having a CEO telling him that he can't have that player and he didn't agree with him. You know, so the environment was wrong. Now, United are promising that they're going to change the way the club's structured and so on. They said that when Mourinho got the sack. It hasn't really happened. You know, is it that much of a change? The youth setup has changed. Well, people want to see more about the first team as well. We're not winning titles. We're nowhere near winning titles. There's not enough changes being done there. I wouldn't put it down on any individual manager.
Mark, do you think...
Yeah, and I think the other thing as well is that, you know, there's going to be a big overhaul of the first team squad because they weren't good enough. Mm. And, you know, United aren't going to be able to get the top players and they need an infrastructure there in terms of what Liverpool did sort of 4 or 5 years ago to pick up the Firminos, the Salahs, the Manes, who weren't top players. They had a really good scouting system. They identified players who worked in a system that Klopp wanted. And it takes time and it's just gradually built up. And it was only when they were after the Champions League final that Liverpool were able to pay 70 million for Alisson and get the best goalkeeper in the world or one of the top three. And that's the route that United have to take now, but that's going to take 3 or 4 years. My big worry is that the Glazers at the very top really won't understand that and won't have the patience, but that is what's required. And Ollie's taken the difficult first steps. And if you know, if he's going to do that, with the help of Ed Woodard, in theory, then hopefully they back him and can give him the chance, because it'd be a horrible situation for him to do the dirty work and then not see the benefits of that 18 months, 2 years, 3 years down the line, which is obviously what the plan has to be now. There's no quick fix at United. They're not going to spend 400 million and turn them into a title challenging team. But the big problem is you worry that the Glazers don't properly appreciate that.
No, absolutely. They just make decisions as well when it affects them financially, the Champions League, and that's when you start thinking about Solskjaer getting a sack or not, when it's mathematically impossible for us to get Champions League football, or if that is the case at any point this season. If they don't, then you're going to see that they probably will stick by some plan in place. And I hope they do, because a lot of what Solskjaer did in the summer too, the club did. But it's signed a lot of underage players, 16, you know, come over from Holland and stuff. And United haven't been doing that for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's clearly from the manager having a view that, right, to sign top young players nowadays, 50, 80 million is the going rate. So let's do it this way instead and hope these players that were buying at that age go into the first team. And if that is part of the plan, let him, that's doing the hard work, go ahead with it and bring us through that, because we've sacked managers before, brought in top managers, great TV, that hasn't worked. And funny enough, through all that period, the club was being run the same way. So they're pointing fingers, individual managers sacking them, appointing them. They're the actual problem.
Gents, I've got to say, I wish this was a two-hour show, because this is a conversation that we could have for a long, long time. Sadly, we've got to move on. Dale O'Donnell, Stretton News, thank you very much for joining us. Really, really do appreciate you coming on. We're definitely going to get you on again. Mark, as always, nothing but a pleasure. I'm sure we will see you next week.
Cheers, Matt.
Thanks, guys. This is the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. Next up, we're looking ahead to the games with Arsenal and AZ Alkmaar.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
Certainly, have a run.
Alan Smith to your right. Square it. Rooney, yes! Wayne Rooney, on his 19th birthday, has sealed what could be a massive victory for Manchester United. Arsenal are beaten now.
This is the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. I'm Matt Beadle. We're with you through to 10 p.m. this evening. And for those who don't remember, that was the 49-49 undefeated game for Arsenal. Of course, they didn't make the big 50. And a man to discuss that game right now is Arsenal fan John Moody to talk about that game and, of course, the upcoming clash with Arsenal tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. at Old Trafford. John, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks, mate. How you doing?
Good, mate. Did you enjoy that clip?
There's better ones I would have picked out to introduce me, I must admit. But, yeah, it's brought back some pretty harrowing memories, but I'll get over it.
Wasn't there a particular moment in that game where Arsenal could have potentially had a penalty or something, and United obviously did get a penalty, but one wasn't awarded to Arsenal? Am I remembering that right?
Well, it was the Mike Riley show. I mean, you are sort of digging up very sort of old ghosts now. Which I thought I wouldn't have to talk about again after all these years, but yeah, it's awful. I mean, the game, the moment that changed the game really was when Ljungberg went clean through and Ferdinand wiped him out as last man and somehow managed to stay on the pitch. And then I think from then, we obviously got the Reyes was kicked to pieces by all sorts. And then, the dive for the penalty. So it wasn't the sort of the greatest day, but it gave us a good chance at least.
Okay, we'll move on quickly, shall we? I feel like I'm dredging up bad memories. But the last victory, of course, for Arsenal at Old Trafford in the Premier League, 2006 and that 06-07 season, Emmanuel Adebayor sneaking one in the last 5 minutes of the game from memory. Yep. It's a tough place to go to for Arsenal, but I always say records are indeed there to be broken. Do you think that is going to happen tomorrow night?
It's hard to say. I mean, certainly in the last sort of, basically, since Ferguson, in the last 3 or 4 years, we've always said this is the year the record has to go. I mean, it somehow appears that United, every single season since then, this is the team that we have to beat, because it happened under sort of Van Gaal, obviously Moyes as well, that we said, how can we not beat it? I mean, in 2016 as well, when I think it was you beat us, like the week after we beat Leicester. I mean, that was when the title race was sort of tipping in our favour, and then suddenly an unheard of Marcus Rashford comes along and scores and sort of knocks out the title race again. But then that was the year that the record was meant to be beaten. And obviously that was now sort of 3 years ago. So God knows what would happen tomorrow. But if you on paper, certainly, you know, we're long overdue on, like you say, and I think we've got the squad and the team to do it. But whether they can actually translate onto the pitch is another question altogether, really.
I think if you were to speak to a lot of United fans, they probably would have sacrificed the record going in these barren years, I suppose you could say, since Sir Alex Ferguson left. And that particular one you talk about, the 2015-16 season where the club didn't make the Champions League, yes, it raised the profile of Marcus Rashford and he came through and bagged a brace that day after getting a brace against FC Midtjylland in the Europa League as well. That sort of started his career. But I reckon most United fans will probably say, do you know what? We would have happily have taken a loss if it meant that tomorrow we'd get a win and get back on track.
Yeah, I mean, completely. it's a very strange sort of time. I mean, obviously, when you hark back to sort of that the unbeaten game there and how different the two teams were and obviously their stature as well. So the game has a little bit lost its edge in that regard. But if you look at, you know, the form book of both sides, I mean, we've had, you know, obviously United's start to the season hasn't been great. We've floundered a couple of times already. But certainly for now, you know, the top four ambitions, albeit not as lost, is winning the title. But it's a massive game. Neither can afford to lose it. And like you say, I think now the importance of United to get the season back on track, because it's, I mean, where does it really go from Solskjaer if they lose again tomorrow? Because there's no sort of sign. It's not like, you know, United have been playing well necessarily. But then again, Arsenal are always a team that we somehow managed to find a way to sort of shoot ourselves in the foot and, you know, get teams back on track. We have an amazing knack of doing it, and it would not surprise me at all if we end up doing it again tomorrow.
So do you really think that, John? Because we do the Arsenal fan show on this station, of course, and last week there was kind of a divided opinion on what's happening with Emery. Some fans were suggesting that, you know, maybe if you lose at Old Trafford that it's time for him to go. I couldn't personally believe that. Another one of the fans said, listen, if we're the kind of club that are going to sack a manager after, what has it been, 16, 17, 18 months or so?
That's
not what Arsenal are all about. What's your opinion on Emery and the team and whether he can get the best out of them?
I mean, it's tricky. I mean, I heard the similar sort of whispers after the Aston Villa game that, you know, had we lost that, it would, you know, the right would have done the wall for him. But my personal view is that he's very much a sort of, you know, the post-Wenger sort of immediate successor to sort of get that out of the club system. I can't see him going into the third year because he's got an option after this second season of his to sell in one more year. It's obviously all hangs on the top four. I think everyone has to that sort of game that first season whereby, you know, the collapse at the end of last year was, I mean, just how we threw away the top four was unbelievable. So everyone sort of went, okay, that's the first year. Now he's got these signings. He's been sort of back in the transfer market. The squad looks more balanced, yet the team's playing more confused seemingly than it ever has done. I think the players now are sort of they just look confused. And they.
You sound a bit exasperated, John. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. No, well, it's just frustrating because it started so well. They had that winning streak this time last year. I think we ended up being about 14, 15 matches unbeaten. So everything was, you know, coming up roses at the time. And then obviously the collapse, but the sort of out of form at the end of last season seems to have edged its way into this. And what was one of his sort of big positives of last season was, you know, our performance in the big games. Because previously, and certainly in the last few years of Wenger, you knew that if we were going to certain grounds like your Old Trafford or Stamford Bridge, the result, you know, we were definitely going to lose. Whereas last season, part of the fight, we should have really won Old Trafford last year, but again, we managed to sort of conspire to, you know, sort of self-destruct as soon as we went in front both times. And it was just, again, it's the first season thing, and this is a season now where certainly Emery has to kick on and show that he is capable of getting that team into the top four, because I do think it's a top four squad, but he has to prove that he can do it. And if he can, maybe he can say sort of that third year. But I would not be surprised if he goes into the season, because like you say, we're not a club that sack managers, you know, out of the blue, albeit, you know, the board now and the ownership is very different as it has been in the last sort of few decades. But I can't see him being sacked mid-season, but I also can't see him staying on for that third year.
Lovely stuff. John, before you go, mate, a quick prediction?
I'm going to on the positivity side, good, just for my own sanity, well, going all the way up there. So I'll say a famous 1-0 win, but in reality, it will be very different, I imagine.
A famous 1-0 win. 13 years on from the last one. Perhaps not so unlucky for Arsenal fans tomorrow. John Moody,
indeed,
thank you for joining us.
Thank you, no problem.
That was Arsenal fan John Moody. We're going to switch straight over to the Europa League because, of course, United face AZ Alkmaar this week on Thursday night in their second Europa League outing. Delighted to say we've got Michael Statham on the line, an editor for the Football Oranje website. That's orange to you and I, but Oranje in Dutch, of course, and the YouTube channel as well, which I might add is the biggest Dutch football website in English language. Michael, thank you for joining us.
Hi there, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for coming on. United face AZ Alkmaar. I'm just going to look at the stats this season because they've only conceded three all season, yet to play the top two, of course, but conceded three all season. That's less than anyone else in Eredivisie. They've lost just one game. Should Man United be concerned about Thursday night?
Well, I think it's going to be a cracking game. I know that AZ were drawn from the fourth pot in the Europa League seedings. But don't get me wrong, I think that AZ will be Manchester United's biggest challengers in this Europa League group. They've got some really stunning players, and I think three or four may well be involved in the Dutch national team in future, names that we're all going to get to know really well.
Who should we be looking out for then, Michael?
Well, their teenage striker, 18 years old, is Myron Bouadou. He's fast, he's strong, he's a great finisher, and he's been playing almost every single game so far this season for AZ. Also look out for Calvin Stengs, who's already on the brink of getting into the Dutch national team. He's an inverted right winger, likes putting on his left foot quite a lot, but also, you know, he shoots, he crosses, he can thread through balls through. I think he will be the main danger man against Manchester United on Thursday. But it's not only those two. You've got Kurt Miners in midfield, is a captain. Leads by example. He holds the back line together really well as well. And also Owen Vindal, a really young left back. I think that this could be a game that Manchester United could be a little bit shocked by. I think AZ have got plenty to offer.
There's a bit of Premier League experience in there as well, isn't there? Ron Vlaar, of course, is there. And yeah. Jordi Klaassi as well. Is that the Klaassi that was at Bolton? Is that correct?
Jordi Klaassi was at Southampton.
Southampton, sorry, yes.
Yeah, he didn't have a great time in England, and he has only been a bit part player so far for AZ, one of those that comes on to shore up the midfield later on in the game. But yeah, Ron Vlaar, who's been brilliant in central defence, he used to play for Aston Villa and was one of the best defenders at one of the previous World Cups for the Netherlands. Yeah, he's finding form again. He's been an absolute rock in defence. That doesn't mean that there's weaknesses, though, in this AZ defence. I think that might be something that Man United could look at, because AZ like to attack and there's plenty of space in behind, I would say.
Well, interestingly, they may be without Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford, leaving Mason Greenwood up top potentially on his own. So a tough test. I know you're saying that there are weaknesses in that back line. But just to focus on the ground itself, United have a history of going away to Europe. The one that always gets brought out when the Champions League starts is the first time they went to Galatasaray, welcome to hell, etc, etc. What's the ground like at AZ? Is it going to be intimidating? Are the fans going to be on top of the players?
Well, I know that AZ fans will carry an atmosphere, but the problem at the moment is they won't be playing in their own stadium in Alkmaar, unfortunately, because the roof collapsed in the summer.
Oh.
So at the moment they're playing in The Hague. It's AZ Den Haag's ground, one of the mid-table teams. Similarly sized ground, but it's a trek for most of the AZ fans to get over there for the night. I don't know if it's a sell-out crowd still, though, but I can tell you that in the league games they've struggled to fill the stadium because it's a trek for so many of the fans. Yeah, I think that the AZ fans will make it a good atmosphere. I think they'll do quite well for ticket sales because of the size of the game that it is. But it won't be as hostile as, say, a Turkish atmosphere.
Okay, Michael, really appreciate you coming on. Just before you go, a quick score prediction. How do you see this one going?
I think that AZ are going to have plenty of chances in this game. The problem is they can be a little bit wasteful. So I think that we will see a narrow Manchester United win, and I do mean a narrow one. So I think United will catch AZ out on the break and make the most of the space in behind if AZ put players forward in the 4-3-3 with their wing-backs getting quite far forward. I think there'll be plenty of chances for both teams. So I'm going to go with a 1-2 Manchester United win.
Top stuff, Michael. Thanks for coming on.
No worries. Thank you very much.
That was Michael Statham, an editor for the Football Around You website and YouTube channel. Great stuff. A 1-0 win for Manchester United in Holland on Thursday. It's the Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. Next up, we've got some history.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Jordan, nice little touch for Wilkins. And Wilkins, a good early ball. And it's Thomas who benefits. Jennings has come out and got a hand to it, but Jordan will score. And that is 2-0. All made by a beautiful bit of vision by Ray Wilkins.
Lovely stuff. We do love a bit of nostalgia on this Manchester United Fan Show on Love Sport. We've got about 8 minutes left, and that particular game was in December 1979. That is 40 years ago. An Old Trafford pitch covered in snow. Those were the days when we used to get snow at Christmas. It used to be a white Christmas because Since 1975, Manchester United and Arsenal have played each other in the top flight for 44 consecutive seasons. That was the fourth season that Manchester United and Arsenal had played. Of course, 40 years on, still going extremely strong. I'm delighted to say someone who might know a bit about that game is Paul from the At United Before Fergie platform on Twitter. Paul, thanks very much for joining us.
No, pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on.
No, mate, it's great to have you on. Firstly, your platform on Twitter is absolutely brilliant. Some great, great stuff on there.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
How did it all come about for you? Because obviously the talk about United that you mostly see on Twitter is very much from Sir Alex and beyond. But you've taken a conscious decision to look at life before Fergie.
Yeah, it's been 6.5 years now where we've been up on Twitter, and since then we've come on Facebook and Instagram. But it came really because I was on Twitter from my own personal perspective a number of years ago, and all the chat at the time was all about the current situation, and it was Fergie's last season, or just before David Moyes joined. And I kind of go back a little bit further than that, but there was very little of sort of reminiscence and nostalgia for United on there at all. It was really tough to find. And I just made a conscious decision that I thought, I wonder if there's legs in this. Sure. I thought, I don't know how many of the older United fans are on social media, so that was a bit of an unknown. And I thought, I'll just try it. I'll see what happens. And if it bombs, it bombs. It doesn't matter. If I get 100 followers, happy days. And it just went on from there. I put a tweet out just to say, any old United fans that remember the days prior to Sir Alex joining the club, just share your stories, photographs, memories, all that kind of stuff. And it just went off. And so that was 6.5 years ago now. And the idea behind it is to share those memories amongst other like-minded fans, but also almost like an educational platform for some of the younger Reds who may not have enjoyed the Ron Atkinson era, or maybe the Tommy Docherty era, or maybe going even further back into Matt Busby. And it's been a real education for me as well, because you played that clip a few minutes ago with Ray Wilkins and Joe Jordan, 79. I was 7 years old then.
Wow.
So I'd only really been I wouldn't say a fan, but I'd been supporting or following the club. My first real memory of United was the 77 Cup final, which I think a lot of Reds of my age, and when I'm 47 now, we may well put down as that was their first game they remember. And then just kind of moving through the years. I mean, the Ron Atkinson time was really my time, as I was going through school, and he joined in 81, so I was 9 then, and right the way through to 86. So it was a very short stint in the grand scheme of it, but that was my era. That was my United team, and even now I will always refer back to that as my United team. Although there's been some phenomenal teams and some not so phenomenal teams in the meantime.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to answer your question as to whether it might have legs or not, Paul, I mean, 54,000 followers, I think, speaks volumes for that particular argument. Interesting that the 1977 is the game that you kind of remember, because mine is actually New Year's Day 1989, which was also against Liverpool when United beat Liverpool 3-1. Brian McClair, great scissor kick. Russell Beardsmore having a good game on that one. But that that was the Fergie era. This is before the Fergie era. And I think that what's key with what you're doing is that particularly now there is a real romance, isn't there, for what we'd call retro football, in a sense, where people love seeing some of these nostalgic clips and images.
Oh God, yeah, absolutely. There's been several United history pages have popped up since we started, which is fantastic. The fact there is a real appetite for it, and what's really pleasing from my perspective is that there are some guys who would have been part of Tommy Docherty's Red Army in the 70s that would have seen George Best made his debut. And there's even one or two that go back to the days of the Busby Babes, the Duncan Edwards, the Tommy Taylors of this world. And I just love hearing these stories, because obviously I've got no memories of that. It was 14 years Munich happened 14 years before I was born. But just hearing the stories and looking at the photographs and just casting my mind back what it would have been like to have followed United through the 50s. You know, obviously the dark days of 58, the relegation of 74. But the one thing that really does seem to stand out from it all was, although the football at times was really poor and not great, that the support from the fans at that time was completely unwavering. And it was, you know, United were their club, and it didn't matter whether they were second division, first division, wherever they were in the table, they took the biggest away support in Division Two in 74, to all the towns, the Orients and the Sunderlands and all these places and Cardiff. It just sounds like it was a fantastic season to be following United. Although, oh yes, we won the Division Two Championship, but then there's the seasons after that and into the sort of Dave Sexton era, and even the early Ferguson years. You know, that the football wasn't great, but United still had a phenomenal support. And that's one thing that really strikes me, is that no one's ever gone, I'm not going to support them anymore because we're not winning trophies, because we're not doing this or we're not doing that. And that really, really comes out as some of the best days following. Trophies were secondary. Trophies were the bonus then. It was the sheer joy of going away from home or going to Old Trafford and standing up and just shouting and singing as loud as you can possibly get. And then, you know, making yourself hoarse and then going home and then come back to the next game the week after. And, you know, the results are important, but they don't seem to have been as important back then as they seem to be now. And it was just the joy of meeting up your mates, going to the game, having a few beers. I mean, obviously we know about the troubles in the 70s and the 80s in terms of on and off the football pitch, but it just seems that there's a real nostalgia for that, and the support just doesn't waver. And I really kind of tip my hat to some of the guys who are older than myself that experienced the Tommy Docherty years, experienced the 68 European Cup final, and you can almost hear the emotion and the tears when they're tweeting me to say, oh, I remember this, I remember that. And that really comes across, despite what's going on at the moment.
Yeah, that interaction you've got with those ex-players is fantastic. I know you mentioned it on your handle, Whiteside, McGrath, Morgan, Macari, Hill, Robson and Blackmore. Paul, I wish we could talk for longer. I wish this was a two-hour show. I think I say that to every guest that we have, but we do sadly have to move on. And just that season you mentioned, the 74-75 campaign, is so good to watch on the Big Match Revisited that often pops up on BT Sport. Like you said, wonderful times, unique times really in the recent history of Manchester United. Paul, thank you for joining us.
Absolute pleasure.
That was Paul of the @UnitedBeforeFergie platform on Twitter. Be sure to check it out. Right, we're off. We'll see you next Sunday at 9 p.m. on Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us @Love Sport Radio on Twitter.